Today on Compassion Radio.
There was a little girl who was 8 years old. We were gathering attention by going through these little communities. It happened that the first community we were in must have been about the time school was getting out when we were still walking. All of a sudden, children started following the group.
Of course.
And there was one little girl who was 8 years old. She was in her school uniform, and she started following us, wanting to know what we were doing. The missionary couple explained to her. I led her to the Lord, and probably get choked up a little bit, but she was just a bright star there.
This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. On this program, Bram spends time with people who live their lives in a missional way, whether it's in a mud hut in remote Africa, a church in war-torn Ukraine, a village in Nepal devastated by an earthquake, or one of the countless Christ-centered ministries in the United States. Bram is there, tirelessly bringing you the life-changing stories of God's love, goodness, and faithfulness. Cuba, a beautiful island inhabited by wonderful and loving people, a people who've been oppressed by a cruel communist regime since 1959. That's a long time. It's also a place where being a Christian can get you beaten, jailed, killed, and sometimes all three. Today, Bram talks with Christian businessman Chris Kramer about his time as a short-term missionary in that country. Here's Bram with part one of that conversation.
Well, friends, Compassion Radio is all about helping to tell the story of what God is up to around the world. You hear us introduce you to people every day that are doing extraordinary things. And some of the most extraordinary people do not see themselves as extraordinary. And I believe that today's guest would be one of those kind of people. But I believe his story is extraordinary. Chris Kramer, welcome to Compassion Radio.
Thank you very much.
Now, you and I have been friends for about 25 years or so. God's been good and shown us lots of opportunity to minister together. You've been active in the church as an elder, as a lay leader, and for the past 30 years of your career, you've been in the corporate world. You're now a small business owner. And funny things happen when you have little conversations while someone's repairing your car. So as I'm sitting here having my car looked at your new franchise, we started talking about experiences on the road doing missions work. I've had a real love affair with the stories that I'm hearing coming out of Cuba. Then I find out you actually went there and saw some of the incredible things that I've been hearing about. So I wanted to ask you a few things about that today, if you don't mind.
That'd be great.
As a lay leader going on a short-term missions project, you often expect to maybe step into a country where they might need something built or something repaired or some evangelistic outreach. What were you invited to do down in Cuba, and when was this?
We were actually invited to go with a friend of ours who was a short-term mission planner. He was working through an organization that would bring people like us down to Cuba for a week to really do a myriad of things. One was we were there to work through churches to give our testimony to the Cubans.
And this is a pretty big step at the time, because the year you went down there was when?
It was 15 years ago.
There wasn't much happening in the way of detente between America and Cuba at the time, and tourism was not forbidden, but it was really unlikely to happen. So you had to really have a reason to be there, and you were going places that most of the tourists would not.
Correct. As far as Cuba was concerned, going there for humanitarian reasons. Mm-hmm. Each one of us packed in an extra suitcase full of medical supplies and clothes, toiletries, those sorts of things.
So tell me about the culture shock. You had not spent a lot of time out of the States before this, so what happened to you?
Correct. Well, we flew into Varadero, Cuba, and we flew on a French airliner from Vancouver, BC, because we couldn't get a direct flight out of the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I do remember we were packed in like cattle. Hmm. I remember the seat in front of me when the person leaned back. You know, I could basically put my thumb on my nose and touch the back of the seat with my pinky. A little bit claustrophobic. I think we had an 8.5-hour flight directly into Varadero. When we got there, unloaded us on the tarmac. It was like a flashback into the early 70s. Mm. The tile, the color of the walls were very drab. It was a little intimidating, too, because they had guards with machine guns. Mm-hmm. They sort of funneled you into a room. You talked to somebody behind a glass window, gave them your passport, the whole bit, behind a closed door, locked in this room. Mm-hmm. Once we were given the go-ahead, the next door opened and we walked through. We popped out into a hallway. then we could see other people. It was, I mean, comical. They were trying to be a commercial airport, but it wasn't very commercial. They had a turnstile where our luggage came out, and we waited about an hour and a half. Finally, the luggage started coming out, and it was one piece at a time. Yeah. And it took us about 2.5 hours to get our luggage. And they were all opened up and disheveled. You could tell they'd rifled through everything. Our friend, who was a short-term mission person, he'd been there many times, and he had brought a VHS camcorder, the ancient one, he was bringing down to one of the interpreters as a gift. That was the last thing to come out, and we'd all but written it off and started walking out. His son just happened to go back and look one more time, and sure enough, it popped out. They had pretty much thought that somebody took it, and it's never coming back, but we did get it, I remember that.
This is not an uncommon experience in most places where there's a socialist or a totalitarian system in place. It's not easy to get through the encounter with bureaucracy. Everything's going to take way longer than you expect it to in the Western environment. So you get out of the doors and you think, now the adventure begins. What happened next to you?
Well, we walked outside, and I distinctly remember this humongous gap in the parking lot. It was just a hole where there had been a drain. It was all gone. This was right at the main entrance where there was a carport, an overhang. This was the main entrance to the airport. And it used to have a lane where traffic could go under this carport. But at the end, there was just this gaping hole about 10, 15 foot wide. There was no cones, no tape. You just noticed it and walked around it. And it was deep enough to where if somebody walked into it, they'd be dead. You'd fall 15 feet on concrete into an abyss. And it was swelteringly humid there, too. We had to go get rental cars when it was comical. My friend did tell me when we landed, now remember, we're on Cuba time. Right. And what he was meaning by that, it was going to take longer for everything. We actually went over across the parking lot to a little bitty, it wasn't much bigger than a coffee stand where we drive up window coffee stand. We went over there. There was nobody there at this rental facility. Well, probably 50 feet away was another rental facility. Well, they're all owned by the government. So we went over to the other one and asked for some assistance. And they said, no, you have to go to the other one. That's who is taking care of your rental cars. We waited there about 2 hours. Somebody finally showed up, and when they did, they said, the person who has to fill the paperwork out with you isn't here yet, but they'll be coming. And so we waited, I think, another 30 minutes. Once the right person was there, they got, I think, information from our passport. We checked out Toyota Yaris's. These were before they were imported in the U.S., so it was a name we weren't familiar with.
Right.
The cars were comical. They had no airbags, and where the airbag would normally be, and the passenger side was just a big gaping shelf. Then they went through the formality of going through the inspection of the car to document anything we noticed about the car being damaged. It took us an hour and a half because the cars had so much damage on them. Between three rental cars, we had one spare tire that wasn't blown. Mm-hmm. All of the cars had damage all the way underneath the car where people had hit curbs. Mm-hmm. Most of the nameplates and badging were missing. Two of the cars looked like somebody had walked over the top of them. So we were very careful to inspect the cars. When we finally left, driving down the road, it didn't hit me for about 30 minutes that people were living in some of the buildings that we saw. This was rural, a lot of land out there, and most of the buildings were concrete. Most of them had no windows. Many of them looked like they were bombed out. Looked like they'd been through a war. And I started noticing after we had stopped at an El Rapido, which was their poor version of a 7-Eleven, that I talked to my friend, and I didn't know what he was talking about at first. And he said, well, did you look at the buildings? And I said, yeah. Looked like they were all bombed out. And he said, people are living in every one of them. He said, look at the windows and the doors as we're driving out. You'll see there's at least a sheet over them. And sure enough, we started driving, and I noticed that almost every building I looked at was that way. When we got settled in to our destination in Cienfuego, we were able to go out to home churches in the community. And after going there...
This is really unofficial business as well. You weren't allowed or sanctioned by the government to do this.
Correct. Yeah, as far as they were concerned, we were tourists. Right. I don't remember if there's a distinguishing factor over the visas that we had, but they wanted us in. Because we brought money in when we came, so that's why the doors were open. But definitely they didn't want us doing a few things. One was congregating in groups out in public, and they didn't want us interacting with their people. Things were very much segregated in Cuba. And I imagine to some degree are very much segregated today still.
But you were given permission as tourists to actually have a car and have your own mobility. That's a big step forward.
Correct.
And this is at the beginning of what I've heard was a real revival going on in the island. And it's still burning brightly from what I hear.
Yes.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. There's a lot more coming up, so please stay with us.
Hello, friends. This is Bram Floria, president of Compassion Radio. Everything we do is done with the intent to build you up in the Christian faith and to give you opportunities to help build the kingdom around the world. We have the great privilege of celebrating our 75th anniversary. It's hard to believe that this unique radio ministry has been on the air for 75 years. Even more amazing, Compassion Radio is the only completely listener-supported radio program on the air this long. We are not funded by a huge church organization or wealthy benefactor. You are our church, our sending agency, and our partners. I know that God has been working through you to make it possible for us to do this work each and every day. Right now, I want to offer you a special opportunity. If this broadcast has ever challenged you in your faith, inspired you to serve, or encouraged you in any way to do better in your walk with God, please let us know right now by supporting this daily radio ministry and the international mission projects of Compassion Radio with your prayers and with your financial support. Please, friends, reach out today to show us that support as we celebrate 75 years of broadcasting a message of hope found in Christ alone. If you're able to invest with a one-time, or better yet, a regular monthly gift, it will go a long, long way to making sure we remain on the air for another 75 years. You can reach us by calling 1-800-868-2478 or by visiting CompassionRadio.com. When you're there, just click the donate button at the top. And new for this year, you can give right through your phone. Just text the word compassion to 53445. That's the word compassion to 53445. And of course, you can always mail your gift to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Thank you so much for every prayer and your consistent financial support.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria.
You are so good to me. You heal my broken heart. You are my Father in heaven. You are so good to me. You heal my broken heart.
So you walked into a situation where you started actually visiting the home churches that were hiding in small buildings or expanded living quarters. Very much New Testament stuff going on. Describe, if you could, what it was like to visit with and worship with those who were in the house churches of Cuba.
The first memory of worship that comes to mind was when we showed up at a house church. It was my son, another gentleman, and an interpreter showing up to meet with, they were called missionaries, and that was a husband and wife and their two children, which led this home church. The husband had a full-time job doing something else. I don't remember.
These are Cubans, these are not expats that are living there.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they just happened to be people that took on the responsibility that lived in that neighborhood. When we got there in our little rental car, we heard singing. And it wasn't just your typical Sunday morning, go through the motion. It was actually this family's children. Mm-hmm. They had a daughter. I think she was 14. The son was probably 11 or 12, I think. And I think they had a couple of other children that weren't theirs that were with them. And they were singing at the top of their lungs. We walked into this little, basically, hut. There was a small group of people, several women and some other children that were in there singing as well. And I had goosebumps because although I couldn't understand, I didn't speak Spanish fluently, much less their dialect of Spanish. I knew some of what they were singing. At any rate, that was our first, you might say, exposure to worship that came passionately from their heart.
It must have been quite a contrast, too, to the general subdued culture you were in. There's a lot of top-down command and control in that country.
Yes, and it shocked me that they were so vocal and so loud at this building. Because when we opened the door, the first thing we heard was them singing all out. And I understood later, talking to the main pastor of the main church, we quizzed him quite a bit. How have you been able to grow amidst persecution and probably governmental control? And he said he'd been in and out of jail several times, mm-hmm. and that his father had been in jail for many years for preaching. And he said, this is a window of time where the government was sort of looking the other way. So he was taking full advantage of it, which then led us out into the neighborhoods because he insisted that we go out with their missionaries.
We've heard this around the world a number of times, that while the window of opportunity is open, you go through it. When the fields are white, you harvest. You don't wait for better opportunities.
Yeah. And it did seem like the field was ripe for the harvest. I never have gone through something like this before. And with my son, when we went through that little neighborhood where that church was, the couple had asked us to follow them.
How big a space were they worshiping in?
I think there was two rooms. It was probably the worst building, except for one home. It was the worst building in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Most of the buildings were kind of small, single-level apartments that were made out of concrete with concrete floors. This was basically a wooden thatch, poorly constructed, and that was the church.
And without any resources available, no currency to work with, you build with what you got.
Yep.
So this family had opened up that space to be a worship center. They're asking you to step out with them into the community. Now, how long had that mission family been praying over and reaching out to that community?
They said they had been praying for the community for 5 years.
That five-year period, they've been investing and sowing seeds and praying hard. And then you stepped out with them to go visit and meet their people.
Yes.
What happened?
We went a small trail right behind the church, kind of going through the backyard into a gate. I think at the first hut, the gentleman that we were with, he shared how he came to know the Lord with this woman. We also used the pictorial cube from Awana to go through the steps of salvation.
Visual representation of all those inward actions that the heart goes through.
Yes, that became a tool that we started using. Mm-hmm. And then that first location, the mother accepted the Lord. Her daughter accepted the Lord right after her. And then we went right next door, which is basically through another small gate into another home. There was another lady there. She accepted the Lord. And then another girl after that. And every place we went that day, it was a repeat. And if we got in the door, we shared the Lord with them and they accepted.
And by sharing the Lord, you're talking about your own personal testimonies of how God changed your life from the inside out.
Exactly.
Your story mattered to them. Now, of course, I would guess that you started getting suspicious that this was more cultural than something spiritual.
Yeah, exactly. I started becoming very skeptical. I told my son, I don't know if they're just doing this just to appease the Americans or what. So I was suspicious that maybe they were just going through the motions.
But then what did the pastor tell you?
Later on, we had an opportunity to visit a pastor of another church in Cienfuegos. I thought, here's my chance, because there had been a group there 6 months before. So I asked him, I said, well, how many conversions were there? And it was in the hundreds for that group. And I said, well, how many people are still connected with the church? And as sort of matter of fact, he said, well, all of them. Mm-hmm. I said, well, how are they connected? And he said, well, we baptized them all. And they're all in small groups and they're all in Bible studies. Mm-hmm. That made me realize that maybe there's something to this.
It's a great awakening beginning.
Yes. Needless to say, it seemed like every house that we were able to get into and share, those folks accepted the Lord. And I don't remember very many doors being closed to us. We were able to only work for 2.5 days. And we had over 300 conversions. I think we broke out into 4 or 5 groups. So 4 or 5 house churches that we worked through. We were able to go through 2 separate communities.
Overnight, you have churches erupting.
Yes. I will say one thing that I had kind of forgotten about for a while that really became dear to me. There was a little girl who was 8 years old. We were gathering attention by going through these little communities. It happened that the first community we were in must have been about the time school was getting out when we were still walking. All of a sudden, children started following the group.
Of course.
And there was one little girl who was 8 years old. She was in her school uniform, and she started following us, wanting to know what we were doing. The missionary couple explained to her. I led her to the Lord, and probably get choked up a little bit, but she was just a bright star there. Yeah. She came back the next day and followed us in another neighborhood. I found out later she had asked permission to get out of school early. She wandered around the whole day, holding my hand and just kind of being there with us. I think at the end of the day, she got upset because we weren't going to be in that neighborhood again. You know, and I told her I'd pray for her, and I still do to this day. Don't know what became of her, but...
She's got to be a young lady, maybe having a family of her own now.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got faces like that locked in my memory. My predecessor, Norm, talked about being with the Garbage Children of Cairo, and how you sat down in the dirt and played with them, and knowing you have to leave them, you know what to say. And when a little girl comes up to you and says, can you come back tomorrow? Your universe is rocked.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say that was probably the most exciting part of the trip, just seeing her light up.
Yeah.
And it was also the most painful, knowing I wouldn't see her ever again. But there was, I guess, a lot more activity that was really kind of exciting.
Yeah.
For the first time, I guess, we got to glimpse at, I wouldn't say persecution, but government control and actually government fear.
What do you mean by government fear?
Well, every morning we sort of had a process. We'd show up at the main church in Varadero, which was near the town square. And we would go in to the parsonage, meet the pastor and his family, have coffee, pray, kind of get ready for the morning, and then we'd go out on our mission. We got there as normal, and we could tell a government vehicle parked out front with soldiers, with guns. So it was like, yeah, this is a communist country.
Yeah.
That was kind of a wake-up call. Ensuing after that was the pastor having a heated conversation with these soldiers. Mm. What we figured out was a Communist Party member who represented that area was there as well. And there was a conversation that happened for the time, and then we were told that we had to go report to this government facility. So we all got in our cars and went down and spent a good portion of the day, most of us sitting outside on a curb, waiting their turn to talk to some interrogator, if you will. That was kind of intimidating at first, and a wake-up call that we were in a communist country. We didn't
You're not reading your Miranda rights at this point.
Correct. Yep. None of that happened. They chose to interview, you might say, or interrogate two of the people that had been there the most. One was our missionary friend, and the other was a young lady who had gone down there many times with him. And I imagine because they knew that they had been there several times. And of course, they wanted to know what they were doing. They didn't pull any punches. I remember they told them exactly what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And the pastor, even outside the building, when he was talking to the officials, holding his Bible up and kind of shaking it at them and talking to them about the Lord and witnessing.
Right there at the police station.
Right there at the police station. And there was a government official behind the counter that was shaking, physically shaking and afraid. He was just witnessing to him, and he kept going. And I don't know all what he said, but it was very clear he was standing up and speaking out the truth.
So there's a sense of favor happening over you at that time. There's not an oppression at the moment. God's clearing out some space for you. And not just for you, but for the local missionaries and pastors there to speak the word boldly.
Yes.
And there are sometimes seasons like that, where even in the most oppressive environments, there just seems to be a season of favor, where bold proclamation is something that God cheers on and makes possible. And of course, that empowers you to believe bigger things than you might have expected. You have no reason to be afraid of the authorities. Fear God.
Yeah.
So you step out again and finish your time there in Cuba. What happened during the rest of your visit?
We were told after that we weren't allowed to go out door to door, that we had to stay in the tourist places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we could go to the town square, we could go to the shops, we could go to the beach, and we could definitely worship at the church. That evening, there was a special worship service at the church. It ended up being, I think it was about 4 hours, and it got wild. Now, this is a Methodist church we were at.
And I understand the Methodists in Cuba have been very evangelical for quite a while. So.
Yes.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria, and today's guest, Chris Kramer. We'll hear more of this conversation tomorrow. If you've missed any part of today's broadcast, you can listen again anytime just by opening up a browser on your computer, smartphone, or tablet and going to CompassionRadio.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And please think about signing up for our email updates. Again, it's CompassionRadio.com. Now, if this broadcast is a blessing to you, would you please consider three things? First, please pray for us. Your prayers are vital to the effectiveness of this ministry. Second, would you please tell a friend about Compassion Radio? Sharing this broadcast will help us reach as many people as possible with the encouraging reports Bram brings us from the mission field, both here in the U.S. and abroad. And finally, would you please consider supporting this ministry financially? Compassion Radio is 100% listener supported. That means it's your gifts that make it possible for us to continue. Now, there's a couple of ways you can get a hold of us. You can call us right now at 800-868-2478, or you can go to CompassionRadio.com, and when you're there, just click on the donate button. Again, it's 800-868-2478, or CompassionRadio.com. Now, if you'd really like to make your giving super easy, you can just text the word COMPASSION to 53445. That's the word COMPASSION, COMPASSION, to 53445. And last but certainly not least, if you want to go old school and mail us your tax-deductible donation, great. Just send it to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Thanks a lot. And thanks for taking time out of your busy day to listen. We are so very thankful for you. And please be sure to join us again for more Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. This program is sponsored by Compassion Radio Ministries and your generous financial support.